This audio fiction is recorded for an adult audience. It may contain scenes of explicit sex, violence, and disturbing supernatural entities. Listener discretion is recommended.
Come, lend me your ear, as I speak to you of the macabre, the cursed, the maligned, the malignant, the possessed, and the downright demonic. Bolt all doors, lock all windows. Are you alone? Are you sure? I suggest you check under the bed, carefully, twice. Baratanak, a new darkness at the world's edge. Episode 2, The Abyss. January 17th, 2017. The side gate slammed at Declan's back. He leapt forward as if ambushed, then turned to see the large sign spelling, "Beware Hungry Guard Dogs." On the road, he paused by the house's faded wooden sign, Le Papillon. The tall, dense hedge had tried to consume it, just as the pruned bushes concealed the property from the vehicles that ploughed the road between Bridgetown and Bathsheba. He smiled. The name thrilled him, conjuring Henri Charrière's accounts of surviving Devil's Island, a malarial penal colony in the jungles of French Guiana, not too far away. Since arriving in the Caribbean, he had twice entertained the idea of flying to Cayenne, then on by boat to the site of the old prison, to see the places famous to him from the first book his grandmother ever bought him. Behind the hedge, the sound of the gardener's radio trailed away listlessly as Declan walked on his path to the beach. Barbados was once a hell worse than Devil's Island, he thought, as the radio died completely, replaced by the parched hum of the surrounding woodland. Just out of sight, around a bend, a gloomy ravine cut through the mountain. Declan had felt its dark presence from the day he arrived. On a few occasions, from a lookout platform at the back of the property, he had seen smoke snaking skywards from its thickets. A small steep path nearby plunged into the jungle below, inviting him to discover the origins of the burning. Things live there, he had thought on his first walk to Bathsheba Beach. Dead things. Some days the air was so heavy he chose to pass by beyond the far side of the road, his feet earthed on the island's soil rather than the soft, trespassing tarmac. Is that sulphur? He asked himself, stopping abruptly. The hairs on his neck prickled. His nostrils flared, sampling the air that swept up the ravine. Now it's gone. Perhaps it was the hot bitumen. Just forget about what's happening down there, Mama Myrtle, an elderly neighbour, had warned. Stay well away. They had crossed paths on one of his walks, and he had asked about the smokestacks. Mama Myrtle's brown, bird-like face beamed with her West African roots, native Carib cheekbones, and red-leg Irish freckles that dotted her cheeks, like many Bathsheba locals. Though they had never spoken before, he already recognized her from the times he had spied her bathing further down the beach in the morning rock pools, naked as the day she was born. She was as nimble as a nymph in the water, and, being bald as a coot, she flowed through it. "You don't grow fruit or crops down there in the ravine," Declan had asked the remarkably unlined woman, while wondering if she was yet another of the youthful centenarians that dwelled on the surrounding hillsides. "It's my land, but it's never been good for growing anything," she replied, her pixie-like eyes shining as she smiled. "Too many noisy people buried down there. I leave them well alone, and they know to leave me alone." No sign of Mama Myrtle today, Declan thought, as he glanced sparingly into the ravine. Pushing past, he felt its disturbing gravity pull at his eyes. He grimaced at the sight. Treetops shuddered and leaned conspiratorially in a breeze that moaned up the V-shaped valley. Declan's darker fears about the foul crack in the hillside had been validated just the day before, when he overheard a solemn staff conversation in Andromeda Gardens, the local arboretum. One of the employees, an English lady, had avoided having a terrible accident on the way to work that very morning. Her voice still betrayed her shock. "Yes, that's exactly the same spot where the bus went off the road, dragging most of the passengers to their deaths," said her colleague. "You're lucky you managed to stop." "I know this sounds crazy, but I felt hands grab the wheel." "That's exactly what Mama Myrtle heard the bus driver say after he gained consciousness. She was passing by when it happened." "Did she say if the bus driver mentioned an overpowering smell, like rotten eggs?" the English lady had asked as Declan's ears pricked up. "No, she didn't. That's a new one." "It was very distinct. Sulphur. I was coughing from it when I seized back the wheel." "How unusual." "So I didn't imagine it," Declan had thought as he savoured the last drops of the cafe's ginger-lime concoction. His further efforts to write in Andromeda Gardens proved fruitless. He stuffed his bag with his laptop and books, then weaved his way through several tables of sunburnt tourists. "It must have taken a while to get down to the wreck and get everybody out," he thought, when he walked across the arboretum's tree-shrouded car park. Hideous images of twisted metal and sprawled bodies like tinned pilchards crept into his mind. Almost past the ravine, dozens of split, sunburned pomegranates decorated the hot asphalt at Declan's feet. They had fallen from a line of low bushes. He kicked them across the road, their dry seeds rattling. One fruit punted off his foot with a hollow smack. It skidded to a halt 10 feet away. Curious, he walked over and pushed it with his foot. "What the hell?" he said. It was a charred Cabbage Patch Kid's doll's head. He held it, fascinated, thinking, "Where's the rest of it?" Beyond the head on the tarmac, his eyes alighted on the parallel burnt rubber streaks of the English lady's brush with disaster. "Beep, beep!" bled the horn of one of the island's decrepit yellow buses as it careened around the bend. Declan's stomach was in his throat as he locked eyes with the terrified driver, then leapt for his life. He felt a rush of air on his back before he turned to see a line of blurred faces hurtle by. Two small rental cars full of young sun-bleached surfers then whizzed past, glued to the bus, whose driver shook his fist from his window. "Fuck, that was close," Declan said, wheezing in shock. "You can't see a damn thing coming around that corner." Seconds later, his eyes alighted on a macabre sight a few feet away, under the pomegranate bushes. Nestled on a nest of burned twigs and charcoal was the burned plastic body of the doll. "Holy shit, that looks real," he thought as his pulse flickered. A circle of white chicken feathers surrounded the dead fire and the pale, charred limbs. "That's some sick shit right there," he said, as ants seethed over those feathers, smeared with dark, dry blood and the congealed blots between them. Declan tossed the doll's head back to the pile of limbs and awkwardly slapped the ants from his ankles as he walked downhill. Behind him, two large centipedes surged out from the cold embers, raised their heads from the ground and flexed their poisonous pincers. The treetops leaned, their conspiracy patient. A family of mongooses streaked like mirages across the shimmering road before Declan. He paused as one held back, observing the world from its hind legs. When it dashed away, he followed the cobalt horizon that beckoned him to the ocean. Towering feral sugarcane lined both sides of the asphalt, where trees could not deny them sunlight. Green walls of soft singing murmurs, he thought, as their blades swished above his head, taunting him with an imperceptible breeze. He slowed to pluck any wildflowers within reach, fodder for the giant tortoise that lived in the garden. Misshapen leaves and twigs also found their way into his bag. Treasure. For days they would rest on his windowsill, then be burned to ashes to mix with the droitwich salt and scattered protectively across doorways and window ledges. Sweat pooled in dark stains below Declan's belt, his exposed torso offering a banquet to ambushing mosquitoes along the lonely potholed road. He swatted at them, occasionally plucking twigs to whip them from his skin like some religious flagellant. Where he could, he cut cross-country between bends in the road. With one eye on the tarmac ahead, he slipped around troll-like bearded figs and through the alien glades of many invasive trees that had replaced the old native forests of colossal mahogany and silk cotton trees known to harbor spirits. Snap! A twig broke beneath his feet, the air stagnant. Heeding an earnest warning offered by a lady at Le Papillon's New Year party, he peered deeply and stepped with caution to avoid a type of deadly white snake that she insisted infested the roots of silk cottons. Thankfully, they remained hidden. Halfway down to the beach, Declan's feet sank into the leaf litter beneath the branches of a solitary juvenile silk cotton tree. A ponderous, shiny-barked giant, he thought. The tree already had branches thicker than a red London postbox. At the beach, Declan deposited his bag and sandals safely on top of a large craggy rock, the jutting tip of a vast limestone iceberg largely hidden beneath the dry sand crust. On its surface, weathered by countless storms, his imagination conjured a dozen tortured faces, some screaming, others facing private agonies with determined stoicism. He crunched across the powdery sand to the surf line, spotting heartless frowns among the organic and plastic, flotsam and jetsam, marooned since high tide. Wet sand swallowed his feet as he waded forward through the knee-deep water on the beachward side of the shallow reef. He jumped into the scoop of a large coral-fringed rock pool. Completely immersed, he surfaced gradually to the sound of the ocean's furies. His eyes followed the sound, level with the water's surface, across a watery plain. Where the reef ended, he saw line after line of white, frothy walls approach to be crippled at the underwater ramparts of the reef. "Never turn your back on the sea," he remembered his father calling sternly from the sands of Salamis in northern Cyprus, watching him as he swam out to the submerged ancient harbour walls that tempted treasure hunters of every kind. Declan floated, eyes closed, the salt water sealed over his head. His womb was walled with coral and liquid sand and watched over by blue sky. Sucking his lungs full of air, his eyes still clamped shut, he again floated head down. Called by the limitless, he turned his ear towards the deep, listening past the effervescent surf and attuning himself to the earth-splitting booms and roars concealed within it, those that emanated from immense lightless voids beyond the reef. As ever, he was humbled to be in a place where he could experience such vibrational intensities, unfathomable in scale. Floating there, untouched by land, he was free. Declan opened his eyes, surprised to feel sand under his toes while buoyant. Wild white water surged, a looming glassy tower tugged the water from under him. He dived with a last effort to dig his hands into the sand to find an anchor of coral. The water screamed with fury. The sand ran through his fingers, no purchase to be found. He braced his body. The seconds froze, the waves slamming like a freight train. His face was forced into the sand, grinding his cheeks raw against the grains. He was churned powerless as a thick plateau of water returned to the ocean. Oh no, he thought, his pulse pounding at the realization he was to be swept away. He was carried relentlessly across the flat reef's kaleidoscope corals, the usual knee-deep water now chest-high and unstoppable. Dark tracts appeared between the white towers, deep water. Flailing in the foam, Declan grasped frantically at the line of small brain corals perched at the sharp lip of the reef. Yes, got it, he thought, relieved. Blood threaded from the grip of his white fingertips as water surged past him. He prayed the blood was a sufficient offering to the deciding fates that surged around him. In a horrifying moment, with his lungs close to bursting, all the foam cleared. An undersea slope plunged away from the reef's vertical edge. A more fearful submarine reflection of Bathsheba's deadly ravine with immeasurably greater gravity. Beyond was the abyss. Declan stared, hypnotized, filled with a dread of the same ocean songs he had heard in the rock pools. He gasped for air in the wake of a wave, then again in the trough between two unstoppable white walls of seawater. He held strong but struggled against the insatiable pull of dark, crushing spaces. Soon they will have you, laughed a voice in his head. Faces formed in the deep as his lungs threatened to burst. Blurred, dark shapes moved closer, then darted back to the gloom. Sharks, he thought, his biggest fear. Every local said that the tiger shark stayed far from shore, but he'd seen YouTube videos that said the opposite, as did common sense. In the waters he now gawped into, in dread, he sensed entire drowned mountain ranges, littered with the rotting hulks of entire ships. If I don't fight, my bones and ambitions will soon join those of far greater men than I below, he thought. Declan could no longer hold on. He rose to the surface, choking. He remembered tales of drowning, and hoped that if it was his time, then the tales would prove true, and that the final intake of water into the lungs was a sweet release. It was far preferable to staring into the cold, black eyes of a tiger shark. He was still haunted by visions of 15-foot monsters he had seen off Maui. The current tugged at him. He drifted over the reef's cliff edge, the rocks far below making him dizzy with vertigo. Now or never, he thought. His arms swung at the water. Swim, he ordered his body, swim. My disappearance will not become dinner party conjecture for false friends. Declan's heart was on the cusp of collapse from his exertions when one of the white walls lifted him back over the reef and pushed him towards the beach. No, blind worms will not fight over my organs on the ocean floor, he thought as he swam. His arms almost failed him. As he tumbled for what seemed an eternity, his lungs sucked in more water than air. Deposited high on the sand, coughing racked his body as his savior wave dissolved around him. He slapped at the last of its foam, desperate to touch it in gratitude. At that moment he felt fragile, breakable, reborn and alive. Every goosebump and prickle on his body reaffirmed his shaken belief that precious chances of reinvention and rebirth gifted by life's unpredictable events must be seized before they vanish. Frigate Bird studied his gasping body from on high, invisible in the blinding disk of the sun. They watched him lift his face to the sky and mouth, "Thank you." Declan staggered up the beach towards his belongings. Palm trees lined the foot of the tangled hillside ahead. Leaning on the rock, he drank an entire liter of water without pause for breath. Gasping, he saw a small female figure emerge from the palm trees further down the beach before melting back. Mama Myrtle, he thought. She did not reappear. He scanned the far edge of the reef. Several sharp splashes erupted nearer to shore, where sapphire needlefish leapt at the sun to evade the jaws of giant tarpon. The scaled backs of the pursuing predators were as long as a man as they sliced through the shallow water. There but for the grace of God, he thought, squinting at dark shadows that patrolled beyond the reef. Declan! Declan! Vanessa's voice boomed from the atrium. No, Declan groaned, muffled under several pillows. He prized himself from his drool-sodden recess, agonized. His shoulder muscles still burned from his exertions on the reef that morning, his thighs and buttocks similarly from the adrenaline-fueled march back up to Le Papillon. Do you still want a lift to the cemetery in St. Philip's Parish? She shrilled. I'm headed over to Spitestown now, but if you give me the petrol money, I will run you down there on the way. Right now? Called Declan. He jumped up, fought free of the mosquito net, and thrust his legs through his shorts. Shit! Yes, in 5 minutes. It's a bit of a detour, but I can drop you off on the way and pick you up a few hours later, if you want. Yes, please, he shouted, throwing a cap on his bedhead. His cut finger oozed blood, as did his toes, painfully ruined on the coral earlier that day. I'm coming! He winced as he pushed his feet into his loafers. Are you sure you don't want to come with me? Asked Vanessa as she weaved around the local roads. We could go straight to Spitestown and then I could drive back the long way and stop briefly at the church. I'll still need the money, though. No, I'd rather go to St. Philip's, thanks. I need time to do a few things. Declan eyed the Tiffany Green Fortman Mason bag beneath his feet. Inside were candles, matches, crystals, incense, rosary beads, several origami cranes, and a pencil and paper. He had no desire to go back to Spitestown. He was still counting the pennies since Christmas, when his friend Chiggy, Vanessa's son, had dragged him there, to the town's newly opened Nikki Beach Resort, a heaving heaven for showy yacht owners, champagne-quaffing financial services crooks, and the nubile, upwardly mobile of every gender. Though Declan had hardly touched a drop of booze there, a posturing, loud-talking charlatan had managed to hold him and Chiggy to splitting the bill three ways for his entire ravenous family. For weeks afterwards, Declan ate like a Dickensian stray. Vanessa's sleek Land Rover veered past a hamlet of humble, brightly painted houses. They reminded him of the old residences in the French Quarter of New Orleans, to where many French colonists had fled from slave reprisals in Haiti, taking the Caribbean building style with them. He remembered staying there in an old converted stable close to the famous cemetery where Marie Laveau was buried after driving 12 hours from Lubbock. He leaned his head out of the open window, his mind still in New Orleans. He wondered if the pebbles he'd left on the Voodoo Queen's tomb were still there. He'd carried them from Egypt, via London and Texas. In the side mirror, he saw his cheeks bloom with the onrushing air. His nose was bright red, blistered and peeling from the sun. He smiled. "What are you going to do in the graveyard?" asked Vanessa for a third time, her tone edged with frustration. Declan stared into space. Her words slowly broke through. Sorry, the graveyard? Yes. Trees, he blurted. Trees? Yes, Mama Myrtle said that's where the two biggest silk cotton trees on the whole island are. Mama Myrtle said it. Oh gosh, Declan, you really shouldn't be listening to her. She will fill your head with all kinds of hocus-pocus. I mean, she keeps trying to move the bloody land boundary as it is. Oh, really? She seemed harmless, friendly even. She had the cheek to promise me my fortunes would change if I gave up part of the old coconut plantation where it falls away into the valley. I'm sure she meant well. From the time he had arrived, Vanessa had incessantly complained about her atrocious luck. Did she tell you about her husband? Asked Vanessa, turning to glare at him. No, he said. Should she have? Ruminated Vanessa. No, it's nothing. Forget I mentioned it. Declan watched her clamp her lips shut, ending the conversation, but his curiosity burned. Vanessa revved over the last hill and screeched to a stop by St. Philip's Church. The gargantuan silver silk cotton trees were there, their arms like colossal octopi tentacles, protecting the dead. Their roots wound and spilled between the gravestones, some of which they attempted to swallow. Thank you, said Declan, extricating himself and his Fortnum's bag. He glanced around. The village was dead. Not a soul stirred. You're welcome, Vanessa replied. Now just don't get yourself into any trouble with whatever it was Mama Myrtle told you. People can be quite traditional here. They don't always appreciate superstitions, especially around their churches, she paused. And they're dead. Are you sure you don't want to just come with me? Declan hesitated, momentarily tempted. Vanessa drummed her fingers on the steering wheel. The weight of his bag reminded him he had work to do. In his pocket was a scrap of torn paper with instructions noted down from Mama Myrtle. No, it's fine, really, he said, slamming shut the door of the Land Rover. Okay, see you in 3 hours sharp, said Vanessa. She ground the clutch, then sped away. Declan exhaled, his shoulders relaxing as he watched the vehicle disappear over the crest of the hill. He hurried on towards the church gates, whose rusted metal had crumbled like pastry under their white paint. Stepping into the graveyard, thick silence enveloped him, broken only by the dead leaves crushed beneath his feet on the root-cracked paving slabs. Thankfully, still no sign of those white snakes, he thought. A breeze rustled the living leaves high above him. He cocked his ear to their whispers. Declan stood humbled under the gargantuan silk cottons, the temperature cooler in their immense umbra. Like mythical beasts, their arms strained in every direction, some longer than the tree's height. They stretched covetously over the cemetery and its many nameless tombs. The breeze became a wind, a flock of shadows shifted on the ground around him. In their midst, several dark smudges melted that had sniffed at his footsteps since he stepped through the gate. No sunken shadows these, they moved in their own way, immune to the burning light that fought to reach the soil of the burial ground. In a gloomy corner, in a contorted crease between two root buttresses, the smudge's tendril hesitated, then reached into a crusty aperture, a perforation in the earth. They slithered down into the lightless clay to awaken something, to coax it to the surface. The thing stirred, unfurled its limbs, and listened. In its nest of bones, it sniffed the stale air as the crunch of human footsteps echoed through the earth. At times, the atmosphere of Bathsheba and the wilder wooded Atlantic side of the island, where Le Papillon was concealed, weighed on his shoulders as heavily as that of Fitzmarbury. On the touristy Caribbean half of the island, by contrast, the air felt almost absent, vapid. Except for the occasion he risked penury at Spicetown's Nicky Beach Club with Chiggy, he had crossed the island's interior only once before to escape his isolation. A jarring yellow bus ride, following the same route as that which had plunged another bus into the Bathsheba Ravine, had summarily deposited him in Bridgetown, the capital. No longer in the solitude of the wind-blown Eden and rocky, wave-beaten beaches, he felt like a visitor from a past century, arriving in a foreign, cacophonous world of roaring traffic, music, and laughter. He had walked all day there, avoiding crowds by keeping to side streets in his hunt of places of historical note. He sat and read at picture-perfect beaches where scantily clad people frolicked in limpid crystal water. He dipped his toes in the Caribbean Sea, observing all around him but not joining. He had eventually found the great Bridgetown baobab tree, the original reason for his journey. its vast bulging presence sprouted among playing fields and a park. He had read about its miraculous arrival hundreds of years before when it germinated from a drifted African seed. Through the centuries, millions of such seeds must have sunk to the ocean floor for every one that made it. Under the colossal tree's canopy, the cries and horns of the city became muffled and distant. In the shadows of its great boughs, he pressed his hands to its huge trunk. Though he was filled with peace, he shuddered to imagine all it had witnessed, how many hundreds of people had sat in its shade in despair at their lives, slaves and prisoners of every shade from across the Atlantic. Perhaps the last of the indigenous Arawaks and their conquering Caribs had known the tree. When his hands fell to his sides, Declan heard murmuring in his ear. He turned but was alone. He listened again, waiting, but the only voices were those of kids kicking a football a field away. Fear flickered across his face as some invisible cold force pressed into his back, but when he touched the tree's silver bark again, it disappeared. There were no more whispers in his ear. He peered up into the branches looking for baobab fruit. Concealed in the leaves were the silent eyes of a scarlet, iridescent ibis. Thank you for listening. If you have enjoyed this episode, then please subscribe. I must leave you now, but do not despair. If you listen to the next installment, the curse cannot harm you, but you must believe. Now pull the blanket over your head and be quiet. You are not alone. Shh.